Today, our program is competing with the University of Iowa women's basketball team. So I want to thank everyone for choosing the Master Gardener Community Speaker Series 2025. Master Gardener programs use research-based horticulture, gardening knowledge, information, and practices for education, and we coordinate our service projects to promote healthy communities. We thank our supporting sponsor, Hills Bank, Ty and Lily at City Channel 4 for live streaming the program and videotaping. This video is available on City Channel 4's YouTube. And also thanks go to Shannon Balicki for her assistance and to Master Gardeners Brandy Jansen, Sharon Jeter, Sandy Gannon, and Joyce Miller for their assistance. Today, each speaker will present for approximately 45 to 50 minutes and will then take your questions. The audience, both in-house and online, may not be able to hear your questions, so we ask that you step to the microphone following each presentation. And please avoid walking near the cameras because videographers are using wide-angle lenses, and we don't want you ducking because your awkward moments will be captured and shared. Evaluation forms have been placed on your table. Please complete an evaluation form for each speaker and return the forms to me. If you haven't already, please silence your cell phones. And if I were to name today's program, I would call it All In for Iowa. Today we're covering soil health, prairie restoration, and pollinators, and we have a great lineup. When Iowa was settled in the mid-19th century, farmers worked a complete system, growing animals to feed the owners and using their waste to nourish the soil. That practice changed after World War II, when chemical fertilizers became the norm. Soil is the most important aspect of gardening and farming. Healthy soil is vital to growing and cultivating a soil food web. Our speaker lineup today has changed just a little. I'm sad Hillary Olson is unable to be here, but I am especially pleased that National Resource Conservation Service Specialist J.D. Hollinsworth is with us today. He's addressing building soil health. He has a strong farm background and an Iowa State education. After graduating with a degree in agronomy, J.D. worked at a private research farm before launching his career with NRCS as a soil conservation specialist in Fairfield. He has worked as a district technician, a watershed coordinator, and served as a civil engineering technician with NRCS. He is kind of a jack of all trades. He lives in Packwood in southeast Iowa with his wife and children. He farms with his dad on the family farm. In 2013, they began using no-till and cover crops and now use no-till cover crops on all the acres that they farm. They've raised cereal rye for cover crop seeds since 2019. Please join me in welcoming J.D.
Thank you, Linda. And you'll have to holler at me if you can't hear me, and I'll try to speak up a little bit louder. Bear with me, I'm one of those presenters that a lot of times I'm over here and then I'm over here. So they told me to try to keep it close here. So yes, I am the area soil health specialist for all of Southeast Iowa. I cover 24 counties for the NRCS. Started that position back in 2020 is when they first opened that position up. So like Linda said, I do farm on the side with my dad, and we do some no-till cover crop soil health practices. And if I have time, I'll kind of get into some of that, what we're doing on our farm. Hillary is the person on our team that works the most with gardeners. So just bear with me. I'm more the large scale agriculturist, I guess. But a lot of the soil health stuff really is passionate about, or I am passionate about. And so I've really taken a look at what we have been doing in agriculture. I see we have a broken system. I have big plans. It's taking me a while to get there on our farm, but hopefully we will get there. So the first thing I want to mention, and hopefully a lot of you already understand this, but the soil is alive. And my dad is a big believer in soil health. I never thought that I would get him on that track. But he is. The one thing, though, that I'm struggling with is to get him to understand the system is biologically driven, okay? And so that's something that a lot of farmers, they can see the benefits of soil health, but they don't understand why, what's going on behind the scenes. And that's something that the first thing I work with producers, they have to understand that the soil is alive and we need to treat it that way. And so then here, just put up a picture of the soil food web. And in agriculture especially, we've broken this food web, right? With tillage, with monocultures. Had a farmer tell me one time, he said, corn, soybeans, a lot of farmers are like, oh, that's the rotation I use, is corn, soybean rotation. Corn and soybean is not a rotation. It's oscillation. It's flopping back between two crops. Mother Nature would never do that. Mother Nature likes a lot of diversity in there, okay? And so we've broken this system. In a tillage system, we do have a lot of biology out there, but it's mostly bacteria. And so we don't have this good cycle that you see up on this screen. We don't have the higher level biology in our systems anymore. And I had a coworker say, because I was trying to decide which slide do I use, which picture do I show? And he goes, show them both. He goes, this is, you know, that last one talks about the food web and it's more kind of the structure and the line that we have. But here, nice colored picture, we can see how all these things interact with each other, okay? And that's very important that we have to understand. And so the next thing, everything starts with the soil, right? Without the soil, we can't grow crops. And if we can't grow crops, we're not going to be sustainable for our own lives. So first of all, you got the inherent properties of the soil. And these are things that, you know, they change very little, if any, over time. And you have things like the climate, topography, the biota. The parent material is big. If you've got soils that are derived under timber, the soil health is inherently going to be a little bit less. You have more of a diverse biology potentially, but that soil just hasn't built up quite as much as it would under a prairie system. And then obviously we have time in there as well. All soil takes time. Growing up, I was told soil organic matter, it took hundreds of years to build. Okay, and they said, so in our current farming system, there's no way we can build the soil that we've got, like the organic matter. On our farm, in between 2000, I think it was 14 and 2022, we took soil samples, looked at organic matter. We actually increased organic matter, and between those 8 years, we increased organic matter 1% on our farm. So it can be done, and we're not doing anything super high level, and so hopefully I have time and I'll get to some of that in a little bit, but we're not doing anything crazy and we have been able to build soil organic matter on our farm. And then that leads us into the dynamic properties of the soil. And you can see here, this is where the land management, what we're doing with our soil, whether we're tilling the soil, whether we are doing no-till, whether we can get, you know, a lot of these soil health practices that I'll get to in a little bit. If we can add all those things, then we can start changing the dynamic properties of the soil. And here, I've got up here, some of the inherent properties make a difference on the dynamic properties of the soil as well. But so the organic matter, the soil structure, that's another one that we can see a fairly rapid change in, depends on the number of soil health practices that we use. The infiltration rate, that's another one I work with a lot with farmers. That's kind of a big priority for them. They want that water to go in the soil. A lot of times we talk in the soil health world, somebody says, well, how much rain did you get? Well, the joke is between the soil health people is all of it, okay? It used to run off, right? And my dad noticed that. That was one of the first things when I started doing no-till and cover crop, and hopefully I have time here for another demonstration too. But my dad right away said, man, I see changes in your soil. The water's not ponding on your soil. I don't see the gullies on your soil. And so then that's where he was like, okay, now I need to start adopting those practices as well. Bulk density can be kind of important for some producers. The aggregate stability, again, this demonstration will show you that. And then the water nutrient holding capacity. And again, that's one of the problems with in the agriculture system today is because our soil food web is broken, our soil is degraded, we have to put on more chemicals and fertilizers to be able to grow the same amount of crop that we used to, okay? And that's not good. As a farmer, I don't want to do that. I want to lower my inputs. I want to treat that soil because, and you'll see this a little bit later too, I have two kids. I raise those kids on the farm. So this is important to me. I don't want to put on, you know, I joke at presentations to farmers that, oh, fertilizer's cheap, right? So we can just keep dumping it on. Well, number one, it's not cheap. And number two, the efficiency in a tillage system is 30 to 50% of the nitrogen that we put on actually goes to the crop. So if we can start putting on less, and if you reduce those amount of inputs without doing soil health practices, you'd see your yields decline. It's just the broken system that we have. So if we start to increase our soil health, then we can start reducing nutrient values that we're putting in to those crops. And we're seeing that on our farm. So here we have just a nice breakdown of what we want in our soils. A lot of times I'll say about 50% mineral material, but we're gonna break this in down a little bit further even maybe and go say 4% organic matter. That's about where we're at on our farm. I would like to see higher, and hopefully I can continue to build that soil. But 46% the sand, silt, and clay particles. Then we've got the 4% organic matter and 25% air, 25% water. Okay, that's kind of an ideal makeup of the soil that we like to see in healthy soils. We'll move on here and see the soil aggregates. This is where we really start to be able to build up that water holding capacity and be able to have air in the soil. Soil aggregates. Anybody have an idea what the soil aggregates are? Sand, silt, and clay. Okay. But we're starting to hold those soil particles together, those sand, silt, and clay particles, the organic matter. Basically, when we're doing a tillage system, we're breaking all those apart. Okay, and so next I'm going to talk a little bit about how we build those, but we can see here we've got pore spaces in there, we've got water films on those soil aggregates. That's all good indications of soil health. But to build those aggregates, it takes some processes. Okay, so one of the first things that we can get the biotic glues given off by the soil microorganisms. And again, this is why the soil life is so important, okay, is because they are giving off, anybody go fishing? Anybody that likes to fish, you have earthworms, are they nice and dry or are they sticky? They're kind of sticky and slimy, right? So when they're going through the soil, they're sliming that hole as they go. And the reason they do that is because then it holds those soil particles together. They can use that same tunnel over and over and over. And so some of that is gluing. And that picture to the left, you can see the holes from the earthworm that they've left. And those holes will stay there. Okay, now why I like that on my farm is because I start to develop these earthworm holes, channels. Not only is that giving the water places to go, but it's also giving my roots places to go. Especially early on when I'm building my soil health and building that structure. If I don't have those, poor soil structure is going to impact my roots. So instead of going straight down, my roots go over and then down and over and down till they find the path of least resistance. The fungal communities, the bacteria, all these microorganisms in the soil release root exudates or release their own glomalin, and depends on the type of bacteria and type of fungus. They all give off a different type of exudate. But some of my colleagues, I have a colleague in Northwest Iowa, and she is very good at the biology. She could tell you about every community and what type of kind of a release that they give that helps build that soil. But the other thing that we have is the root exudates from plants. Okay, now this is important for multiple reasons. Number one, we're building that soil aggregates. You can see here the pictures where the soil is sticking to the roots of the plants. This is what we like to see. Once we start to see this, if you see this in your garden, if I see this on my corn plants or my soybean plants, this is telling me that we have good root exudates coming off of those plants. We're starting to build that soil structure. The other thing that these roots do for us, those root exudates, is feed our biology. And I'll get into a little bit more in that in depth here in a little bit. But so those are primarily the two ways that we build the soil aggregates in our soil. So I really like this picture here. The one on the left is from one of my coworkers' farms. He has pretty good soil health. He started no-tilling cover crops in 2012. And so in that, basically what they do, they go out and take a soil core, and they put a resin inside that soil. They inject that in there, and then they are able to use like a laser and cut a very thin section of that soil. Then they put it on microscope slide, and that's what you see. Okay, so all the blue area is the pore space that would be for air and water. And then you can see all the sand, silt, and clay particles making up different colors there. But then if you compare that to the picture on the right, there's no pore space or very little. Okay, so you're not going to be able to hold the oxygen in the soil. You're not going to be able to hold much water in that soil. The other thing is the problems for the roots. The roots don't have those pores to go, pore spaces go down through there. And then here in the bottom, you can see this is kind of I call it a cartoon drawing. On the left, you're building those soil aggregates. We've got more pore spaces. On the right, we've kind of destroyed that soil structure, those soil aggregates. And now we're having less pore space. The roots are going to have trouble getting down through there as well. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about, okay, so we talked about the importance of the microorganisms in the soil. Now, how do we start to do that? How do we improve our soil health? And there's five principles of soil health that we at the NRCS in Iowa use. You'll see some people say four soil health principles. They'll take out the livestock and they'll throw that in with the maximized biodiversity. And then you'll see some people say, well, there's actually six, and they'll use context as a sixth soil health principle. But I think I view context kind of integrated in all of these. And the reason that I throw livestock separate is because I think it's important enough, and the rest of the soil health specialists in Iowa, there's five of us, we get together and we've talked about this, and we feel that livestock are that important to soil health that we just can't lump them in with something else and kind of forget about it. But minimize disturbance is the first one, and farmers typically think about this as tillage, and that's a big one. But the other thing, and farmers don't like to hear this a lot of times, but excess chemicals or excess fertilizer. If we're having to use those, especially if we don't use them responsibly, that's a disturbance in the system. Okay, and so that will interrupt how fast we can build soil health. We can be killing off some of that biology if we don't use those inputs responsibly. Maximize cover. This is, again, a lot of times farmers view this as tillage. Okay, if we're not burying the residue, it's out there. I will tell you, on our farm, even without tillage, if I don't manage my cover crops properly, it looks like I tilled, because I'm starting to develop enough biology that they consume all that residue, and I want something out there. It's no different than that week that it was below zero. I guarantee you everyone in this room wore a coat outside. Well, again, I talked about our soil's alive, and so if we're not protecting it, if we don't have that layer to armor that soil from not only the raindrops, but also the temperature swings, either cold or in the summertime, the heat. So it works both ways, all parts of the year. Maximize biodiversity. Again, I talked a little bit about this before, about corn, soybeans, it's not a rotation. Adding in a cover crop increases this a little bit. As gardeners, most of the time you're doing a way better job of this than farmers do, because you have multiple things in your gardens that you're growing. But any little step that we can take, we can see improvements. Okay, just like I said, Mother Nature never puts two, three things out there. There's always a whole bunch of plants out there growing. And my belief is that if we don't do that, if we don't put the diversity out there, Mother Nature is, and that's where we end up with our weed pressures. And that's just one of my opinions anyway. So the cover crops can do this, but the other thing is, if as farmers we can start doing rotations, then we can see some improvements. We've worked with Practical Farmers of Iowa quite a bit on this, trying to develop other markets for other products that we could grow as farmers to try to improve our diversity of crops that we're growing. Continuous living roots. This is another one that's important. A lot of times farmers don't quite understand why this is, but then it goes back to the biology. Okay, the roots give off those exudates, and that helps feed the biology. And so when I do presentations for school kids, I talk a lot about, especially if I give a presentation before lunch, I'm like, how many people ate breakfast? And of course, they all raise their hand. And I said, how many people's hungry now? They all raise their hands. I said, well, the biology, sometimes we expect them to live for months without putting food out there for them. And they're like, oh, they didn't think of it that way. And so this is one that's very important to keep our communities building and keeping them fed. But that's one that a lot of times farmers don't think a whole lot about. And then integrating livestock, grazing cover crops, just like the bison, before we settled the land, had the bison and all the animals out there eating on the stuff that was out there. And they're helping the saliva, the back end products, that's helping build that biology. And the similar things that we can do with grazing cattle today. My coworker has livestock, and he can really, his soil health improved a lot faster than what the typical farmers would because he's out there grazing those cover crops. So all those soil health principles, the two basic things that we're trying to accomplish with all those, with those five soil health principles, number one, feeding that biology. Okay. So that's that's a huge impact thing that we need to do. We want to continue to pump good, diverse food in there. It's just kind of like, this is another thing that I like to talk to school kids about. I said, well, if I gave you cheese pizza for free, are you guys going to be excited? And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, what if 2 months I only give you cheese pizza every meal? Well, that's not going to be much fun. I want something else. Same's true with our biology, okay? Different root exudates, different things out there. That's going to help develop a better microbial population out there. And then the other thing I've kind of touched on a little bit, but we fed the biology. Now we want to protect that habitat, okay? Providing that layer insulation against the cold swings. We've actually seen temperatures. We've gone out and taken soil temperature readings. Two fields right side by side. One had no-till and cover crops. The other one was a tilled field. And this wasn't even like late in the season later in the season when it gets really hot. This would have been early June. We noticed a 30-degree temperature swing from the no-till and cover crop to the tilled field. Okay, that was 10 o'clock in the morning. We saw 30-degree temperature swing. Later in the afternoon, if we would have gone and checked, we probably would have seen an even bigger temperature swing. And anytime we get temperatures over 130 degrees, we start to kill off that biology. Okay, so that's going to be important a little bit later in something I bring up as well. So cover crops, if you go down through here and look, these are the five soil health principles. And this is why cover crops are the missing thing. Back in the 80s and 90s, farmers started to use no-till in their systems. And a lot of farmers were like, I saw this big yield hit. It's not working, so I'm going to go back to tilling. Cover crops were the missing part. Okay, you guys aren't, Washington County isn't too far from here. Washington County producers started to see this. They had an Iowa State Extension official that kind of had thought about this before and started presenting this idea to some farmers. And back in the 70s, there were producers in Washington County that started using no-till and cover crops, and they're still using them today. And that's why Washington County is the number one user of cover crop in the state of Iowa. All because one extension agent was willing to say, hey, let's try this, see if we can make this work. And so you can see all these things that the cover crops can do for us. Okay, they check all the boxes, and that's why it's so important. I actually talked with farmers sometimes about, okay, they're saying, I'll give you no-till or I'll give you cover crops. I don't want to try both at the same time. Cover crops. Start with cover crops. That's the most important thing. Probably 15 years ago, I would have told you the other way around. I would have said cover or no-till is the most important. But after what I've seen in talking with farmers, if they take cover crops out of their field for 1 year, they see a decline in their soil structure that fast. So that's why it's so important for us to have cover crops. Like I said, I have very little experience gardening. I had done some gardening and I wanted to expand my garden. And then my mom said, she just laughed at me. She said, when you're needing to be working on the garden, she goes, you're busy at the farm. When I got married and my wife and I started gardening together, and we had a no-till cover crop garden, and I thought we were going all good, and then we had kids, and then all the time disappeared, okay? So we haven't gotten started back up in gardening. Hillary was the one that works a lot with gardeners, so I'm going to give it my best here. So the first thing, if somebody wants to integrate soil health in a garden, okay, and some of these principles are the same thing that I'll tell any farmer, anybody working with the soil. First thing, and my staff, I do a lot of training for our NRCS staff and throughout the area and the state, but they get tired of hearing me say goals. That's the number one thing. Because if you don't have a goal in mind why you want to do this, it's not going to be successful. Because the first time you have a stumbling block, hit a stumbling block, you're going to be very eager to give up and say, I'm just going to go back to the way I was doing things before. But if you have a goal in mind, number one, you can develop a system to help you achieve your goal. But also, it's something to put in the back of your mind. Okay, yeah, this was a rough year, but I want to get to this point. A goal on my farm. Someday I would like to farm without any commercial fertilizer and no pesticides. It's going to take me a while to get there, but that's my goal. And so when I have those struggles, those years that I struggle, that's in my mind. Someday, this is where I want to get. Plan ahead. Again, I work with producers sometimes that are like, okay, I'm going to do no-till and cover crops. I've never done it before, and I'm going to plant green. No, that's a bad idea. Baby steps, okay? Plan ahead. Think about, before you ever get started, okay, here's how I'm going to do this. Here's some of the challenges I might face. Here's how I can overcome those. Talk to others that are doing things that you want to try. Okay, that's important. Farmers, same way. If you try it on your own, you can learn some things, but if you talk to people that are already doing it, you can avoid some of those mistakes that they've had to run across, and it'll shorten the time that it's going to take you to develop those. Be willing to adapt. That's really important for farming. My dad told me this spring. He goes, I'm a believer in this, but he goes, every year there's something else that we have to work through. And he goes, some other struggle. And I said, well, that's why some of the bigger farmers don't want to do this, because this takes thought. Okay. So keep that in mind. Be willing to adapt, start small. Just like farmers, I tell, if you farm 1,000 acres, don't do 1,000 acres the first year. Same with a garden. Pick a spot in your garden that you're willing to try. Okay, I'm going to do some cover crops over here, see how it works. Okay, that worked well. Now start to expand that throughout the rest of your garden. Or if you have multiple gardens, which I'm guessing probably a lot of you do, but if you start small or pick one garden or something like that, you can do some trials and figure out how it's going to work in your operation. And then share your experiences. I know as gardeners, you probably are a lot better than farmers. Farmers are like, they don't want anybody to know their business, it seems like. But we need to share those experiences, right? Not only the struggles, but the successes, okay? And if you talk to a farmer and they're like, oh, this is great. I've never had any problems. You probably don't want to take their advice, because I guarantee you, if you're doing some of these things, you're going to run into some struggles. Soil health in the garden. These are just some things I threw up there, whether it's no-till or strip-till. Whether you're just tilling where you want to plant your seeds, or till an area. Maybe you have a lot of the garden that you don't need to till, but a certain produce that you say, oh, I know from experience, I really struggle with this one, so I'll till this little area. Rotation or diversity, again, as gardeners, you're doing a lot better job of that usually than in the agriculture sector. I like that we've got some pollinator and some prairie people coming up talking about, because I think that's one thing, and if I get to it, I'll show you some pictures of things I'm doing on my farm, trying to integrate, trying to mimic Mother Nature a little bit better. I know I'm not going to be perfect, but. And then animal manure or compost. This is becoming a bigger thing with the NRCS. They have a practice standard for compost. And, you know, my thought throwing this up here was, maybe you've got a neighbor that has backyard chickens and they're like, I don't know what to do with my manure. And maybe you might say, hey, I could use, we'll work together, we'll compost that, and then we'll use that on the garden. I'm just throwing ideas out there. This is something I would love to do, compost on my farm. Haven't quite figured out how to make that work yet. Cover crop selection. Again, this is something that I work with a lot of our producers too, and trying to help them what they want to accomplish. That's the first thing. Again, hear me say it, goals, right? We have to start there. Then what is your main crops? I put crop, and then I was like, well, gardeners, you have lots of different crops that you're growing. So you have to understand what crop you're growing and how those cover crops may interact with those cash crops, so to speak, that you're growing. And it's going to take some thought process. This isn't something that you can say. I shouldn't say you can't use all cereal rye, because when I did a no-till and cover crop garden, I did use all cereal rye. I planted the whole garden to it. It was about 3 feet tall in the spring when I terminated it and then planted into that. And then I'd bring in the grass clippings, and then I'd got weeds because I didn't know what I was doing. But it takes a thought process. Planting, when do you want to seed? That's the next thing. I don't know a lot about the soil health and gardening, but what I've been looking into is you might have some cover crops that you want to plant in the fall and you want them to overwinter, and you're willing to let them go a little bit longer into the system because maybe your the garden product that you're growing, you don't have to plant until maybe June. So you can let that cover crop go a little longer. But if you want to plant your garden, a certain area of your garden in, say, March, maybe you don't want that overwintering cover crop. Maybe you want something that's going to winter kill. So those are things to think about. And then this is a big one. I tell this to producers too, farmers, how do you plan to terminate? Because never fails. I got a call from a producer this spring. He said, I planted cereal rye for the first time ever last fall, and it's head high. What do I do? I said, should have planned ahead and got it terminated way before it got head high in your first year of growing cover crops. But so that's something that you need to plan ahead and think about when how you plan to terminate. Some termination things I just kind of threw up here. Winter kill, that would be turnips, radishes, things like that. Anything that will not survive the winter. Now, the one thing you need to make sure of is even some species like turnip and radishes that normally would winter kill, even in the ag sector, we are seeing every once in a while there's a year that they will overwinter. And so then we have to think about, okay, now what if that happens? Just be prepared for that. Tillage, this one I struggle to put up there because I really don't like using tillage as a method of terminating cover crops, but it is an option. I am on the belief system that, hey, we have to use all the tools in the toolbox, and you know, if that's the option that we have that's going to work best for our system, that's what we'll do for now. And then maybe 5 years into the system, then we say, okay, now I've adapted, now I'm going to use a different management style to terminate those cover crops. Mowing and cutting, that's one that can work really well for certain cover crops. And I think they passed out some handouts that I brought. It talks about some of the different cover crop species and how different of these different termination methods can work for different species. But typically that mowing, you have to wait a little bit longer for that cover crop to mature for that to work, but it is an option. Crimping, again, a lot of times that has to be a little longer into the system. You can't terminate cereal rye, for example, when it's a foot tall with crimping. It's just not going to work very well. You have to wait till that cover crop is fairly mature. And then a tarp, I've read a lot about this in gardening systems. The one thing that I will caution you, yes, you are going to kill your cover crop by tarping it. You're also going to be potentially killing some of your soil biology, because if we get that soil really hot, okay, we're trying to limit that the sunlight getting to them and things like that, but we're also increasing the heat within that. If we get that soil temperature over 130, we start to kill some of that biology. So that's just something to keep in mind. I don't know enough about the tarping to say, yes, how much you're going to kill your biology. But again, it's the tools in the toolbox, and you have to think things through and see if it makes sense for your system. So I'm going to leave this up here while I start this next demonstration. But Hillary sent me this first one. I know it's from Indiana. But it's a website, and they had a lot of good information on there. Garden-specific, and some of it's links to other sites, but they had a lot of good information on there. And then this Midwest Cover Crops Council, they had some really good information that they will start to do a produce cover crop tool. So you can type in what produce you have, and they'll help you pick out a cover crop. They don't have that finished yet. Right now, it's just for the ag sector, but they are working on that. So now, we'll see how this works, if you guys can still hear me. But so I'm going to do a little demonstration here. I've got two soil samples, two soil aggregates, and it might be a little hard to see back from in the back, but this is off my farm, no-till and cover crop. This is off my neighbor's. I just jumped the fence. It's 50 to 100 feet apart, not very far. Same soil type. The only difference is the management. Okay, this has had, 12 years now, no-till and cover crop. This one has continuously been tilled. And like I said, it's probably a little difficult for in the back to see, but there's a color difference. That color difference didn't used to be there. We're building organic matter. We're not destroying our soil. So now, and the reason I brought this one instead of my big slake tubes is because this is something that you all can do at home. It's not, I've got slake tubes that I can, you know, do this demonstration. They're not very easy to get out in the farm or out in the fields or in the gardens. I'll see if I can do this. See how good I am if I can do both hands this time. So basically what I'm doing is I'm simulating a rainfall event on these soils. And I'll hold these up once I get...
The left one is the tilled? Or
no, yours?
It's
the tilled. This one is the tilled. This one's the no-till. So like I said, basically what I've done is I've put water in the water bottles, and we'd used a thumbtack to poke holes in that. Okay, as we can see, we do have a little bit of soil left in this one. Now, these were collected probably October last year, so the longer they sit out of their natural environment, the more they kind of start to degrade because we're not feeding that biology, right? The soil biology is gone in this soil. But obviously we can tell there's a water quality or clarity difference, right? We have a lot more sediment in this one, okay? So when I saw this demonstration, it was in the slake tubes, not in these littler ones. I went home that day and I stopped tilling on my farm. This was impactful enough for me because not only are we losing soil, but our nutrients, we put chemicals, fertilizer, whatever on this, and it's all ending up in filling up our ponds that we spent good money on, going down to the Gulf, taking those nutrients with it. I want my soil, I want my fertility on my farm, right? So that was very impactful for me. So I think I got a little more time here. I'm gonna go through a little bit about what we're doing on our farm. I know probably a lot of people in this room have heard of the carbon intensity score. And so we've run some numbers on our farm. There's a company, there's a company down in Washington that does a lot with soil health testing and carbon intensity scores and things like that. And so I don't know exactly what's good numbers and not, but there's a lot of companies that talk about going carbon neutral. On our farm, we have a carbon intensity score of negative 21. And so basically what that's telling us is we are putting carbon into the soil. We're keeping carbon on our farm. And that's pretty big for me. I hope someday that maybe the markets will reflect this. There is talk that the markets could start rewarding farmers that are doing these practices by maybe their grain is worth more than people that are just going out and tilling the soil and things like that. So. What are we doing on our farm? We're 100% no-till and cover crop. Had a mistake in here. I put corn-soybean rotation, right? It's an oscillation. We're flipping back and forth. We are growing our own cereal rye and wheat for cover crop seed. So we have a few acres that we take and set aside for that. Depends on the markets, how things work out. I think I might like to start growing a little more and selling cover crop seed. depends on the year. Sometimes we have enough to sell to other producers, and sometimes we don't. We're a little bit different than a lot of producers. We grow 15-inch row rye instead of narrower spacing, but that's because that's the equipment that we have. I've got a mix that on my part of the farm, I'm doing a five-way mix. I've got five different species that I plant in the fall out there. When we plant after harvest, it kind of makes it a little tricky to get some of the species planted and then get much growth out of them. So those five species that I'm using, other than the rapeseed, the other ones should overwinter, and depends on the winter. If we get a, like this year, that rapeseed might overwinter. We've tried some drone seeding of cover crops, and the further into the soil health system you get, the better chance you have with success, or the further north, the better, higher organic matter soils, they'll have better luck with flying them on. We've had kind of mixed results with that, but then we have a lot of other conservation practices. We have a lot of terraces on our farm, a lot of waterways, sediment basins, pond. All of our creeks and ponds have buffer strips, grass strips along them to kind of capture some of that sediment. Not that we're losing as much as we used to, but it's still just such a benefit. We can see wildlife and stuff like that. I would like to, on my farm, I've started switching those over from a brome grass, and I've started doing some pollinators and things like that in those strips. I'm trying to work on my dad to understand that this is a benefit, but I think that's gonna be a little bit harder sell. This is just a picture of me planting our corn. we've got a starter tank on the front tank on that planter is where the starter goes. It goes right on the seed. It's just to kind of give that seed corn a little bit of a boost. I have put some biological products in with that as well. And then the tank that we're pulling behind is our nitrogen. And so we're putting the nitrogen 2 inches off from the corn. Instead of just putting nitrogen all the way across the soil, I'm putting it close to that corn seed. So I'm hoping that I can reduce the amount of nitrogen that it takes by putting it right where it needs to be. And I've been running some humic acid with that to help it be a little more stable in our soil as well. And then this is a picture. You can see the cereal rye once it's been terminated, and you can see that corn growing in there. When Mother Nature cooperates and we get adequate moisture, this system works perfect. In dry years, it would have been 2023, I would have been embarrassed to have people come out and look at my some of our fields because we didn't get moisture, and the biology takes moisture to break everything down. We didn't get it. Our corn looked horrible. But at the end of the year, when it came time for harvest, our soil biology was built up enough, the soil health was built up enough, that corn made up for it late in the season, and we ended up with a very, very successful yield. This is planting into our soybeans. Corn, sometimes we plant into green cereal rye, sometimes we plant into terminated cereal rye. Soybeans, we have found no reason whatsoever to terminate the rye before we plant beans. There's none. The soybeans love being planted in the cereal rye. I think it has something to do with the nitrogen. The cover crops taking nitrogen away from the soybeans. It makes the soybeans nodulate better, and then they do get a boost of nitrogen from the rye decaying later in the season and kind of gives them a boost. So here you can see the soybeans in that residue. This has been a very nice system for us. We really like it. This is what happens when Mother Nature doesn't cooperate in the spring early on. Last year we had 8 acres that we had planned on roller crimping, and we wanted to try it, and then this happened. We had 3/4 of our acres. Cover crop was headed out because it kept raining, and so then we did some roller crimping. And this is what it looked like when the beans came up. And we found actually that if we wait for the beans to get up and then roller crimp it, we have better yields than if we roller crimp it before the beans come up, which confused me a little bit. But I think the beans like being hurt a little bit for some reason. It doesn't make sense to me, but they like being stressed. Stress is a better word. So then here's just the cereal rye we're growing for seed. This is a picture of the mix that I seeded last fall in November. And then this is my field and the neighbor's field Side by side, you can see the structure on the left is a lot better. Here, this is the same demonstration. This was fresh. So if you take these soil samples fresh and run this demonstration, that's what you see. And then if you flip them over on the table or on the plates, you can see how it just turns to pudding. That's not what I want on my farm. I want that soil structure to hold up nice. Then where I'm at now, so I've converted the brome on my filter strips. I've started converting it to prairie. I did an Ada Hayden mix on my farm, but in my backyard, I wanted some nice diversity. I've got a space back there. I was like, ah, let's do this. So I did this Prairie Moon mix. And you see I planted it fall of 2023. So this is me with the kids out there. I wanted these pictures because I want them to see, okay, 15 years from now, this is you guys helped establish this. And hopefully I'm instilling this. My son one time joked, he says, Dad, I need a, he likes little toy tractors. He says, I want a disc. And I'm like, why? Well, his grandpa, my father-in-law still does tillage. And he goes, well, his grandpa tills. And I said, well, if you start tilling, you're out of the will. So you don't get the farm. but he now is starting to tell people, you know, hey, this is pretty neat. So this is taken June 27th. This is July 12th. Now, I tell a cover crop seed dealer, or a seed dealer said, hey, can I share some of this? And I said, yes, don't tell people this is going to happen year one. I was out there every night pulling weeds because I wanted it to be successful. I didn't want to have to mow it. That it hurt. The first day I saw flowers coming up, I was like, I can't mow that off. So I started pulling weeds. This was July 22nd, what it looked like. This was August 15th. And then September 9th, that's what it looked like. So it was a labor of love. My DNR wildlife biologist in the office, he's like, you're crazy. Why are you doing this? I'm like, because I want it to look good. And it hurt me to go out and destroy flowers. And so I said, I did enough of that on my farm where it was too many acres to do. But I said, this 40 by 40 area, I said, I can pull weeds. I want to have something that looks really good. Whoops. And then this is why I do what I do. This is why, you know, when I present, are there farmers out there that don't care about the environment? Absolutely. But there are a lot of us out there that, those two kids I raise on the farm, they're right there. So if my soil disappears and I can't farm anymore, it doesn't do them any good. If I pollute the water, I don't want them getting sick, right? So there are a lot of us farmers that do care because this is impactful. When I present to farmers, this hits right in the fields for them. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
If you have questions, please step to the mic.
Here, Liz. Oh. You can come back here.
I want to rehab. I garden with a neighbor, and I think he just wore out his garden soil. So we're going to do a bye year, and I want to build up the soil. I put manure on it last year, but it's got too many squash bugs and all that other stuff. Is there like a recommended crop cover that I can put on the off year to kind of help build up the soil? Like, would it be like a rye, or is there like a mix that would be?
So as far as specifically, uh-huh. The things that I would look for, number one, I would do a mix. The more diversity in a mix, when we have an off season where, say after small grain harvest, that gives us a better window. I would not put anything less than 10 species. Dr. Christine Jones recommends at least four plant families, okay? And if we can get, and it gets into complicated, but if you have the crop types too, if you have a warm season broadleaf, cool season broadleaf, warm season grass, cool season grass, if you can get all those together, and then the more plant families that we can introduce into a mix, that's gonna be better. Okay, so that's one thing, is definitely a mix. But the other, there's lots of places out there. One that I know I know about it specifically because we've had a chance to tour it. Green Cover Seeds in Nebraska is one. And maybe there's other people around that have good cover crop suppliers. That's just a place that we have toured that has They send cover crops all over the place. And so, but the one other thing that I think I would talk with the seed supplier would be, okay, here's the pest issues that we have. We don't want something to create a green bridge that, okay, we put this out there and all of a sudden now we just gave them a habitat for the squash bugs and we made them worse. So that's something that I would keep in mind too.
I have a naive question. So I'm going to do cover crops after you harvest in the fall. We don't get any rain in September. How does that cover crop ever germinate?
So that's a good question, because we found early on when you first start into a soil health system, there's a lot of times that producers, their cover crops won't grow. We have seen now that even in dry years, our cover crops are going to grow because we can get enough moisture in there. Now, if we're drone seeding them, that's a different story. Okay. But as long as we're putting them in the soil, we have had excellent success getting germination in the fall. Even when some of the guys that are not quite so far into their soil health system, we're seeing success. The one other thing that I will talk about, mention quick, because that made me think about that, is terminating our cover crops in the spring. And again, remember, I want to get away from using chemicals. Right now, we're not there. And so terminating with Roundup in the spring on our ahead of corn, a lot of times they talk about how the temperatures have to be really warm for chemicals to work. We have found, because of our soil health, it's kind of like if you guys had a party, you were going to have 50 people in your house. Are you going to leave your thermostat set at 74 the hour before the party? Probably not. You're going to turn it down because all those people are going to increase that temperature. We're finding the same thing with soil biology. When we get healthy soil, we've got side-by-side pictures of a tilled field and a no-till cover crop field. And the no-till and cover crop field, the snow is actually melted sooner than the tilled field because that biology is active. They're moving around in that soil. So we can actually... Our rye will wake up sooner and have growth sooner because our soil health is built up. So that's a good question.
When you tell farmers that it's broken, and they are increasing their yields and making their money, and the system that they have works, what do you tell them is broken? Because trying to sell them healthy soils, but the current system doesn't seem to require healthy soils. Correct. It requires the system that's working. Mm-hmm. So what specifically is broken, and how do you describe it?
Yep. So another good question. And this happens a lot, and sometimes I'll give a presentation to a group of farmers, and the joke is, if you want farmers to show up, you have to feed them. And so there are people that come just for the food, and then if I get a producer that all of a sudden starts pointing his finger and yelling at me, I'm like, good, this is good. I struck a nerve. Because if they don't believe what I'm saying, then they will just, guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But if they start to come back after me, I struck a nerve, and it might be 5 years from now that they start doing something, but I planted a seed. But yeah, farmers, they're seeing more and more yields. And unfortunately, a lot of times for farmers, they look at, well, I want the highest yield. Well, as a farmer looking at soil health, my goal is profit. I don't care, you know, my yields are going to be less than people in Johnson County because our soils just aren't quite as good. But if I can get 180 bushels every year because my soil health is built up and I can withstand drought pressures, the wet years, things like that, I can weather the storm, so to speak. They might get 250 bushel on a good year, but if they have a poor year and they can see it, and they drive by my farm in the heat of summer, the tilled fields, the corn's starting to roll up. It's starting to try to protect itself. My corn, it's not doing that. It doesn't need to. The soil health is up. You're building them, or you got plenty of moisture in there. You're getting moisture coming up from the soil. they might have worse yield. When I talked to my crop insurance person, she goes, why are you spending more? They're selling a product. She's telling me your yields are here. Their yields are like this. So that's what we try to say. Okay, yes, you can grow really good yields, but what's your profit? What's the bottom line? And so if they're having to put, and we're finding it year after year, they're having to put more and more fertilizer on to achieve those high yields. Where if we're starting to cut, like some of the Iowa State recommendations, you're around 1 to 1.1 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of corn. Well, if I can get down to 0.6, 0.7, that's going to help me, right? It's money I don't have to spend. So that's what we kind of try to help them understand is, yes, you are seeing you're still making money and you're still buying this equipment. But that's the other thing is I don't have to have a 400 horsepower tractor to pull tillage equipment anymore. We don't have that. We can get a smaller tractor that all we have to pull is our planter. And then as soon as we're done harvesting and planting our cover crop in the fall, I'm done. I can go, you know, do whatever I want. Whereas now they got to start their tillage operations. And then in the spring, they have to go out and do their tillage operation. And seeing the pocketbook when they're spending all that money on fuel and those big high horsepower tractors, some of them are starting to see, okay, it's not necessarily all about the yield. As long as we can, the return on investment is there. That's where it really counts.
I had a farmers from Washington County come and talk about what they've been doing to their farm. I was so impressed. They do the cover crops. They're using a lot less nitrogen. Mm-hmm. They're putting manure on too.
Yes.
And they're really their neighbors are doing this too, and they're putting a lot less money into growing the crops.
Correct. Yes. Yep. That definitely helps.
Okay, back to home gardening.
Okay.
So a lot of our vegetable crops hang on really late in the season, especially it seems like we haven't had a killing frost, you know, until later. So what is the latest date that you can do plant a cover crop, and what would some of those varieties be that you can plant?
Okay, so the later in the season we get, the less diversity we can have out there, because the seeding windows go down. But like for NRCS standards for what they tell crop producers, we can actually put on cereal rye. Winter wheat is kind of questionable, but winter camelina and winter triticale, we can actually put on those cover crops up to December 21st, and producers can still get cost share. Now, how much growth you're going to get in the fall, it's pretty limited. And the other thing that I tell producers is if we can get them in the ground instead of broadcasting, we're going to have better luck. But you're going to still see a benefit in the spring with those. The one thing I have also seen is like for farmers, and I don't know enough about the gardening to say this would work well for you or not, but interseeding. We have farmers that are seeding cover crops when the corn is V4 to V5, so it may be like this tall. Farmers are putting cover crop on then. Sometimes they have to widen their rows to get sunlight to them and everything. But also in the fall, as soon as the crops start to turn and start to mature, they're going out and flying cover crops on, and then the cover crop may be you know, up before they actually get the crop harvested. So those are a few options, and like I said, everything's going to be different on your level of management and what your goals are. But some of the winter hardy species you can actually seed pretty late and still get some benefit. Got one more.
You probably don't have as many supply chain issues then with using localized cover crops from Nebraska?
So like I said, most of the cover crops that we use on our farm, we grow the cereal rye and the wheat now, but it depends what we're wanting to plant. We have, there's a pretty good local supplier down in Van Buren County that they've got enough of a food plot market that they can get about whatever you want. And I don't know where all his suppliers are from, but it seems like that's why we started growing our own cereal rye, because when we first started, it was tricky to get seed some years. At least it might be, well, we can get you 50-pound bags, but we're using, you know, I'm planting 2,000 pounds a day. That's a lot to put in with bags. So, yeah, so that's where we started growing our own. But the longer we get into it, more people being interested in soil health, the easier it has been to get seed. Now, when we do some of the crazier things, then it's trickier locally to get them, like winter camelina is one. I struggled for a few years. Now I can finally get that. But early on, it was like, what's that? They didn't know what I was talking about. So,
I'm just curious about the corn soybean rotation. You said corn soybeans beans are not rotation. What can you explain that, or what would be rotation?
So what farmers used to do years ago is they would grow corn, soybeans, oats, and then hay. That was a very common rotation years ago, or maybe even just corn, oats, and then hay. But they were doing something different. And right now, farmers, there are farmers that are doing corn, like continuous corn in the same field. Flopping back and forth the corn and soybeans, we call it a rotation, but it really isn't, because you're just flopping back and forth between two cash crops. So in a rotation, the more things that we can add, like if we add a small grain, I work with a producer down in Davis County that he has found raising a small grain in his corn soybean rotation. If he does corn soybean, some of his acres will be rye, some will be wheat. He has found that he actually is more profitable doing that rotation. Now, he has livestock, so after he does corn, soybean, wheat, then he will plant a diverse cover crop mix, and then he will graze his cattle on there. And he has found that now, where he used to have to go out is 10 degrees below zero, and he's having to go out there, fire the tractor up, feed hay. Now he says, I can go out there and strip graze these cover crops. And he said, I haven't talked to him yet from this winter, but last winter, he said there was only 1 week, the whole winter, that he had to feed hay. He says the rest of the winter, I grazed my cover crop fields. And he said cattle did better than feeding hay. So he's really seeing the benefits. His return on investment is drastically increased since he started doing that. And he goes, plus, he goes, when it's cold, cattle love being out there. And he goes, I don't have to go fire the tractor up. So early on, it's tricky because then they have to learn to dig through there. But once they know what's down there, like the producers in South Dakota, for instance, are ones that have been doing this for a long time, and their cattle know, I dig through that snow. And then that's the other thing. They're eating some of that snow if they need water. They don't need as much water in the winter, but they can eat that snow and get some of that moisture rather than having to go back to a stock tank. But they will dig through that cover crop. And then the other thing is we design our mixes so we have some tall species, some medium height species, and then some shorter species. And then that kind of extends the length, because the top species will protect once they get frosted. They'll protect the lower species from the frost, and then the next level of frost protection. So it's kind of a, number one, they'll learn how to dig through the snow, but also we design the mixes to kind of help alleviate some of that as well. So,
if there are no more questions, let's thank JD.